Hey, BA fam, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. Are you a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Hey, we're back. We're black. We're brown. We got to start like a little ensemble.
I thought we harmonized beautifully.
Right? me. Right? Did we celebrate? Did we share that we cracked top 200? Did we celebrate that?
All over the socials. Yes.
But I mean, on the podcast, we didn't mention it, right?
We should say hi to our. We have a bunch of new listeners lately. So welcome if you're new to the show. And thank you for joining us, and thank you to everyone who stuck by us. But yeah, we're for some reason, the magic 4-year mark, people are paying attention. But yeah, we cracked top 200 of all podcasts, which there's like tens of thousands, it feels like.
No more. I Googled to see how many iTunes podcasts there are. It's over 500,000.
Oh, Jesus.
Isn't that crazy? Like, so, when I saw that, I was like, wow, top 200 of over half, I think it's like 550,000 on like podcasts. Like, I was like, what?
Well, when we passed the read, I was like, that's what got me.
No, we didn't.
Yes, we were about, well, not anymore. You know, we dropped down a little bit. But for a minute, we outranked the read. And I was like, what, Crystal, what?
I know. I love Crystal and Kid Fury. Honestly, those are my faves. Yes. I would totally geek out.
Yeah. So that was exciting. But yeah, top 20 in business podcasts. And you know what? Like, it means so much to me just looking at those images of, and you know, it sounds cliche, but our brown faces. Brown and black faces on iTunes in those little square images. When you look at everyone else who's ranking, I mean, it is powerful and it means something to me. So when we see our friends who we don't really know, but some of them, you know, but like you see the Deadass podcast and the Read and adulting podcast and all these like people of color really killing it in the podcast game. It makes me so excited to be a part of that, you know, unofficial group, unofficial class.
And I do love that because you're right. It's just like, you know, I mean, it's just an amazing time to like start something because you have the ability to speak directly to your audience and you guys listen and someone hit me up the other day and they were like, you know, I was interviewed by The Guardian and the young woman, I was like, how'd you find me? She was like, Brown Ambition. I love you, Amandy. I was like, what? You know, I just thought that was so awesome. That happens more and more. And I love when you guys come up to me and give me the hugs I don't ask for because, you know, I'm uncomfortable with hugs, but you give it to me anyway. And I love it. And I love how you give me a hug for Mandy. And when you see Mandy, you're like, give this to Tiffany.
Yes, give her two hugs.
No, you guys are awesome, awesome, awesome. I just, yeah. So, yeah, so just thank you, honestly. Thank you.
Love you guys. You make the show happen. Go leave reviews if you haven't yet and you're new to the show. Reviews really help us get seen more in the iTunes environment. So leave reviews if you can. Tell a friend. And just make sure you subscribe and keep listening. Thank you guys so much.
So what's happening on this rainy day for you?
Oh, so rainy. Let's see what happened. My dog walker canceled last minute. Yeah. That's unfortunate. I'm getting a window into just what it is to try and, I mean, my friends always tell me you can't compare a dog to a child, but I'm like, I really have to keep this thing alive and I have like work to do. And the last week our dog walker locked himself out. We've had some dog walker dramas. You know, and the cost of dog walking is like starting to add up. And then she was sick over the weekend. And I was like, you know, if you're like a pet parent, you have that really terrible thought in your head. Like, should I take her to the vet? Oh, it's going to cost money. Is it worth it? You're fine. And we had this, you know, and it's like an animal. And I was looking at her like, you're not that sick, are you? And thank goodness she pulled through, you know. It was fine. It was fine. But yeah, we haven't gotten pet insurance yet. So, you know, just her first round of, you know, going for her checkup, not even to get shots or anything like that, just to get like a checkup and a couple of tests run. I ended up spending $300, $400 at the vet over the course of 2 days. So, ouch. I should probably
How does pet insurance work?
Just like regular health insurance, except without, you know, the benefit of the Affordable Care Act. You know, pets right now can be discriminated against by insurers for things like pre-existing conditions or or even like if you're a breed that tends to have certain health complications or is predisposed to have certain problems, insurers can deny you coverage or charge you more based on the breed. So there's that. But yeah, you just pay like a monthly premium, and then you most likely you have a deductible whenever you need it. You know, some pet insurance covers preventative care, some is like catastrophic. So I'm thinking about getting a catastrophic policy, which is a lot of what a lot of pet owners do, which is like, you know, if she were to get in like hit by a car, oh God, I hope not. Or get in a fight with a dog and, you know, she breaks her arm or she gets really ill because she eats something off in it, whatever, something really dramatic happens. It would cover something like that. I'm thinking about that, and then I'll just like keep money saved on the side for those routine, you know, preventative care checkups and whatnot. We'll see. But that's where I think people get in trouble with pets is when something really unexpected happens. And then it's a huge bill, all at once. Yeah,
because I can remember I had a cat when I was I think when did I get it? I had to get it like maybe like I want to say like 14 or something.
The cat that went to live with your neighbor.
Yeah, Cinder, the traitor. But whatever. I'm not even mad at Cinder because, you know, I couldn't give her the life that she deserved. She had to be out. But I remember, like, because that was one of the things. Like, I begged my dad for this cat. He was like, fine, you have to take care of everything. I'm like, I'll drive you to the vet, but you have to pay for everything. And I, you know, I babysat and you know, I did like kind of little odd jobs around the neighborhood. And I remember, like, I took her to the vet and, like, I remember our bill was like $150. And I was like, wait. And my dad was like, But I paid it, honestly, because, you know, that was my baby. I was like, whatever, whatever she needs. I remember once I was so scared. I didn't, you know, I was young, so I didn't know anything about heat, like animals going into heat. And she, like, when cats go into heat, they do this, like, arching back thing.
Mm-hmm. You know, basically,
basically they backing that thing up, you know? And I didn't know. I just was like, what's wrong with
that? Oh, you took her for that?
Yeah. I didn't know. And of course my dad
was like, she's just horny.
And my dad of course was giggling. Meanwhile, made me waste all my money. I guess he wanted me to learn a lesson. I was like, my cat is sick. She's sick. Meanwhile, she's backing that thing up like, yeah. And so I had to pay for I got her neutered because I was like, she was like an outside inside cat. So you know, so I was like, okay. And so but that was not cheap, you know, and I paid for that out of pocket, like myself. And so it was just a really good learning lesson of, like, you know, taking care of something that needed you and setting aside that money. And, I was like, now the neighbors have her. Neighbors have my kid. Maybe meanwhile, she had everything she needed. Whatever. Whatever, Cinder. I hope you enjoy your life.
It's a cute name for a cat. Well.
So this is kind of random, but today, it didn't happen today because of the rain, but so the city of Newark, you know how, like, Detroit still, is it, no, not Detroit, Flint still does not have clean water.
Yes, and no one's been charged. It just came out. They dropped criminal charges against basically everybody involved who might have been culpable.
And, you know, so I didn't fully understand, like, you know, like, what does it take? So I, in Newark, there was like an expose. I don't know. Something happened where they were testing water and they found that Newark, you know, because Newark is a very old city, had lead pipes. And there was like not every section of Newark, because some sections are newer, but some sections of Newark were affected with lead in the water. So it was like this whole big thing. And I have to say, I'm really impressed with the way the city handled it. Like, one, as soon as it came out, I'm sure they knew already, but whatever. But as soon as it came out, they handed out, like, you could get free water filters. And then they instantly started, like, a replacement program. So, one, it started, the first phase was getting tested. Like, you signed up and it was free. They like, hired contractors from around, local contractors from around the city and its surrounding areas to come test. So, someone came to our house, our new house, and tested our inside pipe. And luckily, it was copper. So copper pipes are fine. And then they would test the outside pipes. And I mean, you did have to pay if you, cause I believe my contractor was telling me that if I had to pay to replace the water line in the street, that's over $10,000. So the city of Newark said the maximum you would have to pay to replace the copper or to replace your water lines inside and outside the house is $1,000, which I don't know why you'd have to pay to replace copper lines outside your house, but whatever. And so I was like, okay, so I signed up. They came by, they said it's copper on the inside. And then, so that means I just have whatever pipes are in the street. So they're going to replace, they were supposed to do it today, but it rained. But I just thought like, when I tell you, man, it was so systematic. It was like, hey, here are your filters. Then two, you know, sign up to have someone come by and check your pipes because not everyone is affected. Then three, phase three is, okay, we're going like block by block to get you scheduled. And so our neighbors across the street, they got theirs done today. Like I said, because it was raining, they had to stop to do ours. But I just thought like, why hasn't this been done? You know what I mean? I know Flint is probably affected more so than Newark, but just watching the way Newark has handled it, I'm wondering like, why is this not being handled in that way? This systematic like approach, like this grid approach to like affected areas, you know?
I mean, I wonder if Newark is reacting to the crisis in Flint. Like, they don't want the same nightmare.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you can't have, they literally were finding, like, some of the schools had, like, in the water fountains had lead, that water had lead in it. That's how it all started. I don't know who tested it at first, but that came out, and it kind of tumbled out to, like, just in general, that Newark, because it was such an old city, that many of the pipes were still lead pipes. And so I just like really like, you know, like it's disappointing that, you know, it took all of this. But the fact that it's being like, you know, I think it's like a 2 year in the end and like two. Yeah, I think it was like 2 years. That's what I read that that the whole city should be like lead pipe free, which is great. But it just made me think of Flint and asking like, are people so busy like trying to pass the buck that they're not just doing something about it, you know?
Yes, that's what's happening. And low-income brown children are suffering. I think what happened with Flint is a pediatrician noticed it, like a researcher was looking at data from a pediatrician or youth in that area and then saw the patterns. Because it's really dangerous for children, lead poisoning, because it could just cause all kinds of developmental issues. Oh, sad. My dad just texted me telling me not to go to the Dominican Republic. I'm like, great, that news has reached the parents of America.
Yeah, I know.
Have you heard about
it? I saw that. And then, yeah, so like, is it all the same thing? Because some of it, I was like, was it somebody attacked or is it just all the alcohol? Like, I was confused as to like how they were, aside from it being in the Dominican Republic, were the deaths like related outside of that, you know?
So for those who haven't been watching Good Morning America, like my dad does every day religiously, there have been this spate of just unexplained deaths happening to people who are vacationing in the Dominican Republic in Punta Cana, where, you know, my husband's family is Dominican. So I've been to several like Dominican vacations and weddings and stuff. And these are all inclusive resorts and they're, you know, they're like a luxury vacation destination. So the fact that these tourists have been dying, although the country still says that they're not related at all, it's becoming like suspicious, you know, it's a lot of people. My friends were texting earlier, would you go to DR? And, I feel bad for people who have booked vacations and don't have trip protection.
Yeah.
Cause then you're just like, well, you know, what are the odds? I'll go.
Right. I know. I always think that, right? When something is, you're like, I mean, is it really likely to happen to me? Or
yeah.
So yeah, I mean, you know,
low odds, but be careful out there if you're traveling.
Yeah. So this is like also random too. I think I'm going to write a traditional book. Well, let me not say traditional book because I've written obviously books before, but I think I'm going to traditionally publish a book.
Right. Are you traditionally publishing the children's book?
No, because I don't want anybody to own Molly Moore, but moi. Book. Yeah. So a different book because a couple of publishers, like big name publishers, if I were to say them, you'd be like, I know that name. They reached out and it's like other publishers have reached out before. I just was kind of like, no. But I don't know, for some reason, like two or three in particular, maybe say, I might be interested. But then I said, well, I have to get an agent because I don't want to navigate that space alone, you know? I'm wise enough to know now you don't go those things alone. So I reached out to a couple people, and I'd spoken at South by Southwest. Jean Chatsky, you've probably seen her on the Today. Is it Today Show or Good Morning America?
I think she's the Today Show financial expert. Yeah.
Yeah, super nice. And I think I met her at FinCon, and then I was on her like podcast or something like that. She's just a really nice woman. So she'd asked me to speak at South by Southwest EDU, which is like the educational South by Southwest, right, the day before the regular South by Southwest. And we spoke on Time Magazine, had like a panel about kids and money. So anyway, so she was telling me about her new book called, I think it's called Women and Money. She's like, you know, like, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's great. And then it like jogged my memory. I was like, do you have a book agent? And she was like, yes, I have a kick-ass book agent. She's awesome. And so she introduced me, and she is kick-ass. Like, first of all, you know, like, I'm not a huge cursor, but I kind of like when people curse.
Oh, yes, we have talked about this, the cursing book agent. Yes, tell me more.
So she's like, really, like, I love her. She's great. And then we were talking about, so this book agent did the 4-hour work week. I was like, hold up, wait a minute. Isn't that awesome?
Oh, that's like the famous book by that guy. What's his name?
Tim Ferriss.
Yes. Productivity guru. Correct.
Yes. And so, so I just thought, like, so she's started her own business. She's not whatever agency that she did that through. But I just thought, like, wow, it just, you know, was like, this is awesome and amazing. And she honestly is super nice. I met her in New York. And she just gave me like my homework. I have to do like my proposal. Let's do like in a month or so. But yeah, I'm excited. I never really thought about traditionally publishing. But there are some benefits, because no matter what, you know, you're obviously like there. No one takes self-publishing as serious, obviously, as traditional publishing. But for me, I didn't really care about that, because I was like, well, I'm only here to be serious to Dreamcatchers, my audience, you know. And so because those books have done really well, plus two, you know, when you publish traditionally, you really don't get, I mean, if you don't get a good advance, you don't really make much money on the back end, you know?
Right.
I mean, there's some things you can do to negotiate, but still nothing compares to getting 70% of your own book versus whatever it is that, you know, that you get traditional publishing. So I'm excited. So the good thing is, but Lynette, you know, our fairy financial godmother that we all love, Lynette Kafani Cox, I think she's on Good Morning America. She's the go-to financial expert there. So she was telling me, because Lynette has a New York Times bestseller, I think a couple of them, but she has traditionally published and published also self-published. She said the great thing about having at least one or two traditionally published books is that when people love them, people tend to like buy all your books, you know, like, oh my God, I love Lynette. So she was like, it kind of like gives you more sales in where you get more money anyway, which is, you know, the ones that you self-publish. So she was like, you know, she kind of gave me like the thumbs up, go ahead, like, do it, girl. So I'm excited. I'm still trying to figure out like what should the book be. I mean, obviously personal finance, but like, you know, what should the book kind of like be about? Cause I feel like I've covered, you know, so many other topics. And so, yeah, I'm just really excited. And then it's exciting because that book, Tim Ferriss's book, The 4-Hour Work Week, that book, I used to read it during nap time when the kids were asleep, when I taught preschool for 10 years. And it really helped me to start the Budgetnista. I remember I had like a notebook full of notes, and like, it just really helped to like jumpstart like what I'm doing now. So what a full circle moment, right? Like, she played this huge role in that. And you know, and that really helped, that book played a huge role into what I'm doing now. So I'm like, looking good.
So you don't know what it'll be about yet? I'm still figuring it out.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's going to be about personal finance, obviously, but like in what realm? Like, for example, you know, I have my literature challenge books. I've talked about budgeting. I have a budget book. I have a savings book, a credit book, you know? So it's kind of like, well, what, and that, you know what, how about this, y'all, tweet me or like write under my Instagram post, like, what if you wanted a book from me, like, you know, what would it be? So I have some ideas kind of swirling. I'm going to save some of them to myself, what I think I'll tell you offline, Mandy. But I am really curious as to what do people actually need and want. And so she gave me some really great ideas. So I'm kind of like doing some research now. We have a few, like I had written a few like social media posts like in the past asking what people really needed help with, so I can get just an understanding of what do people really need and how do I deliver that. So, but you could tweet me at the Budgetnista, or, you know, post under my Instagram, the Budgetnista, was like, girl, I would love to, for you to write about this, or I'm struggling with this, or whatever that looks like, because that would be really helpful, because I don't want to write a book that you don't need. you know, so I'm excited. And so I actually picked up his book, The 4-Hour Workweek, from Barnes & Noble today, because I am the type that when the books that I like to write, I like for them to have a formula, you know, like here are concrete steps with concrete things that you can do, not just like a book like that's just kind of like talking and like, you know, like theorizing about things. I like to say today, pick up a pen and write this thing down. So, right. And his book is like, you know, in alignment with that. So I was like, let me pick it up and kind of get that energy that helped me move, to transform my life. Cause I want my book to have a similar energy in that it's transformative, but in a, like a real way, you know?
So I'm excited. Making me feel bad. I never read that book before. I know I need to. I'm like the only person who's never read it. I'm gonna pick it up too.
Yeah. It's a good, honestly, it's a really good book. It's just, yeah, I mean, it was really, like I said, it was helpful. And it didn't feel like, you know, he was talking over my head. It was just, he was like one of the first guys to write in that bro language, you know, like, you know, not like, because most of these business books are written by like, I've got my MBA and I've got my doctorate and you're going to, you know, but he was like, hey, what's up, guys? Like that book is very much like that broski kind of language. And even though he's totally like a bro, I didn't feel left out of the conversation. And somehow I felt like, okay, this is for me too.
Well, that's so exciting. Okay, keep us posted.
Will do.
Hey, BA fam, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. Are you a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Shall we take some questions?
Yes, let's.
All right. To appease the audience who thinks I'm ignoring them in the regular email inbox, which I'm not, you can still send us questions at brownambitionpodcast@gmail.com or brownambitionpodcast.com. Ask us anything tab. The thing about questions is sometimes I will skip questions if we've already answered similar ones before. So I like to get a nice variety. So if we don't answer your question, we can't get to every single question. And sometimes it may just be that we've answered something similar. So don't take it personally. We really appreciate you guys sending questions in. And we just try and get to the ones that are a little bit different than we have.
Don't take it personal. Yeah, baby, baby, baby. Who's saying it's all Mandy? Quick, quick, quick. Don't take it personal.
Literally.
Just one of them days, Mandy. No, that a girl goes through. Do I have to take your black and brown card?
Yeah, you can have it. I think someone else has them, actually. They've been stolen so many times and revoked. I'm in debt.
I'm gonna take, like, I have your millennial card. Now this card, I'm like, you know, yeah, so it's okay, we're gonna find. I was like, but you do know Monica the artist?
Yeah, I know Monica.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do. Angel of mine, sweet.
Oh, excuse me.
I can only name two of her songs, though. That one and the Brandy. What was it? The Boy Is Mine.
Yeah. No, I'm surprised because Angel of Mine, I feel like it's less popular than like Don't Take It. Wait, is it one of those? Yeah, that was her first song. Like, then one of them days. But anyway, back to the questions.
Yeah. I was about to go into a whole thing of my childhood. Okay, whatever. Shout out to Monica. Love her. All right, questions. Which I have promptly lost as I was talking about them. Here we go. This question comes from Dizzle DG on Instagram. He says, hello. Oh, this is a guy. Okay. Hello. My wife and I are working on, I just corrected his grammar as I was reading it, which I know is annoying, but I'm sorry, Dizzle. Hello. My wife and I are working on saving money but are having a hard time putting money in places and leaving it there. Because of that, we are looking into putting our money into things that we can't easily access, like investing in mutual funds, ETFs, or bonds. Do you think this is a good idea, or do you have any suggestions on better ideas for this type of saving? I feel your pain.
Yes.
You put the money away, and then something happens, and you dip into it. I've been there before.
Yes. So I think we all feel like that. Like, how do you hide money from yourself, Mantra?
For a while, like, I used to be really extreme about it. I had my checking account in one place, and then I had like 7 separate savings accounts in another bank that where I could open up as many as I wanted. Each savings account had a name. There was like the vacation.
Mandy, you are me. Stop trying to judge me.
Well, this was me. I've toned it down over the years. I've simplified things. Yeah, there was like the savings. There was like the emergency fund. There was the vacation fund, the Christmas gift fund. I mean, it was like, I just remember 7 different savings accounts. Lately, I've made peace with my like my 401k automatic savings, or my, if for those of you who don't have a 401k, your IRA. If ever I'm feeling like I'm doing something wrong, I'm like, but I'm still saving 10% of my income each month, or 10 to 15% depending on, I ratchet it up for retirement. And I always have like peace of mind knowing that I have this money in the bank and that I can't touch it without penalties, you know, without tax penalties or taxes to pay on it, because there's all these rules associated with it. So I feel good about that. And then, you know, if I dip into my savings once in a while, especially when we were doing the house, like the savings was like seriously depleted. Mm-hmm. I could at least feel comfort knowing we never stopped saving for retirement. But as far as like, you know, I do think it's, you know, if you're talking about, it depends on what you guys are saving for, you and your wife. If you're saving for that emergency fund where, okay, leaky roof, car breaks down, you should have that money somewhere you can access it. You just got to be disciplined. So try putting it in a different bank account that you don't have a debit card tied to, that you can't easily access, you know, that you don't have the account number memorized, things like that. But if we're talking about money that you don't need for a year or two, yes, I think CDs can be great. You know, we opened our first couple of CDs a year or two ago because rates were getting a lot better than savings accounts, and it seemed like it made sense. So I'm a fan of that. And, you know, as far as like mutual funds, ETFs, now you're talking about investing. And you have to be aware that if you're going to be saving in the market, you know, it's more investing, and you could, the potential for reward is higher, but the potential for losses is higher too. So, you know, you don't want to be putting your emergency fund for, you know, unexpected emergencies tied up in the market, because, you know, what if something bad happens? Then your backup plan is completely obliterated.
Yeah, I was going to say that, like, if, I mean, I would keep my emergency fund, you know, kind of like locked away at like an online only bank. You can find, I just actually sent somebody the Magnify money yesterday. I was one of my friends. We did like a barter. She is like an amazing photographer. And so she was like, hey, can you just like help me kind of like look at my money and see like what I could do to tighten up? I was like, sure. Can I get some free pictures? So we did a barter. She's like, sure. And so she, I actually told her, go on Magnify. Like, I took her on magnifymoney.com. I was like, click savings. And then like, I showed her like, see, these are like these online only savings accounts that I really love, and look for the ones that are A, FDIC insured, minimum deposit, like, you know, zero, basically, highest interest rate, and that you don't have to have a certain deposit in order to, like, you don't have to maintain a certain deposit in order to get that interest rate. And so she picked one that she felt like comfortable with. But saving like emergency funds there, it at least, don't open up a checking account at that bank, but it at least provide that buffer of like 24 to 72 hours. That's how long it takes to get your money back if you attach your online only savings account to your traditional checking account. So checking account at a different brick and mortar bank savings account online. So that will help a little bit, because literally there's no way for you to get your money except for to make that transfer and wait at least 24 hours. And then, you know, outside of an emergency fund, you know, I think most of us, if we keep money laying around too much, you know, we're apt to spend it. And so, yeah. So, I mean, are you that extra money, if it's saving for a specific thing, or it's just like, there's this extra money And then, you know, then I would look to investing. I particularly like Vanguard. These people are not, you know, Magnify Money doesn't pay me. They pay Vanny though, but she works there. But like Vanguard doesn't pay me anything. But I like Vanguard as far as like if I'm going to look for mutual funds and ETFs, I like their philosophy as a company. They've got a really low expense ratio, which is basically the fee that they charge you in order to manage your money. I think like last time I checked it was like well under 1%. Don't quote me, but I mean that's the last time I checked. And so yeah, you should be investing. I mean, I don't know if you guys are investing. Like, are you setting aside at least 10% of your income for retirement? If that's not the case, maybe start beefing that up a little bit. But yeah, just having your money languishing is, you know, it's a problem we all have. I know I've definitely been there, and so I've been making changes so it's not just kind of sitting there doing nothing, waiting to be spent.
Yeah. And if you guys are, it sounds like the problem is that you're putting money away, but then you're finding that you need it for something. So maybe it's like the symptom of a deeper issue, which could be cash flow. Like, you know, take a look at your expenses versus what you guys have coming in. Do you have unrealistic expectations of how much you can save? You know, should you be starting smaller and working your way up? Or are there some expenses you can cut to give yourself more wiggle room so you can put away more money? And, you know, just, you know, go easy on yourself. Saving a little bit is better than nothing. So take it slow. And thank you for your question.
Yes. And I like CDP. I know people are like CDs, like so like old people, but I'm like, no, I opened up CDs like for my nieces and my nephews.
Listen, I mean, CD rates are now cooling off because the Fed has stopped raising rates every which way like they were for the past, you know, I don't know, decade it felt like. Or certainly the last few years, rates were just going up all the time, and now they've slowed down. So CD rates have slowed down too. But if you're torn between savings versus CDs, just ask yourself, will you need the money, you know, before that CD rate is up? Do you really, really not need the money before you tie it up in a CD? And then compare rates, you know, sites like, yes, Magnify Money, but there's other sites too. You can easily compare rates online now to be sure you're getting the best deal, out there. Thanks for your question, Dizzle DG. And let's go to an email question from listener Iria. I hope I said that right. Credit card question. Iria says, I am 25 years old, young professional with a credit score a little over 700. Congrats, girl. I don't think my credit score is over 700 at 25. I have student debt and a car loan I'm working to get refinanced, but I'm looking into applying for my first credit card and I'm at a loss. My mom's telling me to go through Wells Fargo. Of course she is. And other friends friends are telling me Capital One or Discover. I foresee myself traveling often in the future, so I would potentially like a card where I can get points, rewards, or miles. I currently have a Best Buy credit card. So this isn't your first credit card then.
Yeah.
But she says, I currently have a Best Buy credit card and a CARE credit card for healthcare expenses. I don't use them often, but when I do, I pay them off within the month.
Good.
I've proven to myself I'm financially responsible, so I trust myself with the card now. So she's looking for her next credit card, not her very first credit card.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's great that you've, you know, gotten those other two credit cards and proved you can be responsible.
Yes.
With those. That's good. That's the key. And I don't think, I'm thinking the Best Buy credit card doesn't have, I think my husband has one. It doesn't have an annual fee. And
CARE, yeah, we have one too, a Best Buy credit card. Superman has one. I don't think there's an annual fee.
Yeah, that CARE credit card, you got to be careful with because they're the ones that tell you, we'll give you 6%, 0% interest financing to get your, you know, Invisalign or to take your, you know, take your dog for surgery or whatever. And then if you don't pay off the debt before that interest period, that intro promotional period's over, they slap you with deferred interest usually, which is like pretend as if you were paying interest all along, but they just waited until then to slap it onto your bill.
Yeah.
And it sucks.
So that's good to be mindful. I would say, honestly, of course, like Mandy said, of course your mom said Wells Fargo because, you know, like they like it's tried safe. And true. Yes. I need a physical bank. You don't. Honestly, like Mandy and I both have that. What is it? I always call it, go ahead, girl.
Chase Good Time card.
I never get the name of it right, but it's really the Sapphire Reserve, right? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, the Chase Sapphire Reserve. So the thing about this card, I don't know if I would recommend that card for her. And remember, we're not, you know,
that's right.
Take our advice with a grain of salt.
Yes, I forgot the monthly, the annual fee. Yeah, I wouldn't do that then.
Because these cards are sexy, the Chase Reserve and other, you know, lucrative travel rewards cards, because they give you that 3 points per dollars spent on things like travel and eating out. And then they give you that $300 travel credit per year where they reimburse you for everything from Ubers to train fare to airfare. And they give you these perks, but they charge, what is the annual fee? $450?
Yeah, but for me, it's worth it. But it's yes. likely not worth it for you listening.
Especially 25 years old. Like, you know, you may not want to go that just to that extreme quite yet. I love a simple, you know, you know, you say that you're traveling often in the future, but think about your day-to-day spending habits today. And I would say a nice flat rate cashback credit card that's going to give you a flat rate on all your purchases. Like, I've been a fan of the City Double Cash Card myself because you get 1% when you make your purchase and then you get another percent when you pay off the card each month. So really it's a 2% cashback flat rate card. I think that's a solid card to have in your wallet for everyday spending. If you want the travel reward card without the high annual fee, you could take a look at Uber. Uber has a travel card out now. I think it doesn't have an annual fee and it gives you 4x points on spending like travel and dining. And it has some kind of perks for Uber rides itself, I think. And then what was I thinking of? The step down from the Chase Reserve is the Chase Sapphire Preferred, which mm-hmm. I think is $95. And again, like check these cards out yourself. I'm just rattling off the top of my head, but make sure you know the most recent terms on these cards. But Chase Sapphire Preferred, I think, is 2 points on travel, and then it's $95 a year. So as long as you think you'll travel enough to make at least that much money in rewards or more, ideally, then it can be worth it.
Yeah. And, you know, being mindful, like take it slow. It's easy to get a credit card. I mean, cause you have your Best Buy card, you have the other, your care card. But the thing is those, you know, are pretty limited. Like you spend it at Best Buy. So having a card that you can use anywhere is a different animal. So, you know, just adhere to that same rule of paying it off in full by the month. And you'll be, you know, you'll be good to go. It's easy to go crazy with your first, card, but you know, you've proven yourself to be responsible. You've got a great credit score. You're young, and you've been able to manage thus far. But just like I said, just be mindful because it's easy to, you know, one swipe becomes another swipe. And before you know, you're like, yikes, don't be afraid to leave that card at home if you feel tempted and to take out your debit card and bring it with you.
Yes, 100%. And you know, and do your research. And as far as like choosing a credit card with a certain bank, it doesn't really matter. You know, you should pick the card, even if it's at a bank you never heard of before, pick the card that has the best terms, the best rewards for your lifestyle, and it's not going to charge you high fees and has good customer support and you know, all that. Wells Fargo may have a good travel card, but compare your options. And I'll share a link to a couple of roundups of the best travel cards where you can get started. But think about that nice flat rate cashback credit card that'll just serve you every day too. Cause I think that's a nice entry level. And then you can test yourself with a rewards card. Are you going to be spending more just to earn that reward? You know, that's the temptation of these travel cards is that they get you to spend more so that you get those points, but then can you really afford to pay it off each month? And if you can't, then it's not worth it. But good luck and keep that 700 credit score. That'll serve you well.
Yes. More than anything else, that's more important than that credit card.
All right. Thank you for your question, Iria. And again, hit us up on Instagram at Brand Ambition Podcast on the gram or by email, brandambitionpodcast@gmail.com.
Now it's time for Booster Break. Which one will you give or take? Ooh, okay.
You got to remember these jingles.
So I don't ever. Like, I just forgot it already. You already know. I'm like,
hey, 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 stuck.
That one stuck. With all the rest of them, I'm like, because we actually had some really good, I feel like one day we should do a compilation of all the jingles because I'm like, that was a good one. I remember I had one where, like, I rhymed for, like, almost a minute straight. I said, look at you, Tiffany. You could have been a rapper.
No, but I don't remember that. 177 episodes.
I know. I'm just so grateful, like, for you guys riding with us. So are you going to boost it or are you going to break it?
I'm going to do a break because I have been to a couple of these meetings in the past couple of weeks and it drives me nuts as someone who doesn't want to waste people's time. And whenever I ask someone to do a meeting with me, I feel like I must come with an agenda. So I just hit the highlights. And if I love ending meetings early so I can say, I'm going to give you 15 minutes of your life back. It's my favorite. Love it. I was at a meeting last week where it ended at the 40 minute mark. It was supposed to go an hour. And the person hosting the meeting just continued to, he was like, oh, we've got 20 minutes left. How do you feel about da 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 da? And, you know, that price of tea in China and what's happening in the Dominican, you know, just like all. And I was like, you've got to give people their time back. Why? Yeah. So that's actually not my break. My break is a meeting with no agenda. So, and especially if you're in an environment where time is precious and, you know, a lot of people are involved, like, I just love just three bullet points, you know, not even like a PowerPoint, just like, what is this meeting going to achieve? What is the goal of the meeting? And then like telling people before you start the meeting, like in advance, what the three things you want from them at that meeting, like setting expectations is so important. And for me, it's all about like, I want meetings to end and people feel like, oh, okay, we move the needle, we achieve something, or we know what the next steps are. And it just drives me a little cray cray. When meetings were like, clearly the person hasn't prepared. They don't really know what they're, you know, they call people together. They're not sure why. And we're just going to ramble and talk, you know, for half an hour and then do nothing. And it's just like, ugh, you know, thank you for not valuing my time is what it feels like.
One time I had because we have a monthly team meeting, like once a month, obviously, like a full team meeting. And I had the wrong agenda. So I'm like going on, you know, like whatever. And then I'm like calling. I'm like, oh, yeah, Annalise, I see you're on here. So what's going on with that? It took to like the third person. So I called on our intern, Kiaris. I said to Kiaris. Kiaris was like, I'm not even going to lie. I'm not even ready. Like, I don't. And someone was like, I think you're on the wrong agenda. I'm like, why did y'all let me get halfway through the meeting?
Oh, no.
I was like, come on now. And I was like, meanwhile, she stepped up, was like, okay, well, the update for our financial freedom plan. I mean, and I was like, she was like, I'm not going to lie, Tiffany. I was like, wait, am I on the agenda for this meeting? So everyone just stepped it up and pulled whatever it is they had to pull out of their behinds to be like, look. I'm not prepared, but I just thought it was hilarious that it took Kiaris, the intern, to be like, I'm not sure why my name is on there. I did not request that. It was so cute. And I was like, we try not to waste people's time. We try to keep our meetings under an hour, but yeah, no, I totally get that. Or just sometimes, like even when folks hit me up on like social and it's high and you're like, okay, I know they have a question and I don't mind ask a question, but you don't have to butter me up and wait for me to say hi back. Just, hey, Tiffany, you know, thanks so much for blah, blah, blah. I have a question. Like you can put it all in one sentence because that initial hi or that initial, hey, what's up? It's like, I know you have a credit question. I know you got a budget question. It's okay. Yeah. Literally, since your budget needs to account. I don't mind if you get to it. Even when you see me in person, like I honestly don't mind unless I'm like rushing off and I'm racing off somewhere. You could tell that I'm, you know, busy or if I'm on the phone, you know, and even then typically if I'm at like a Whole Foods, I'm probably talking to like my sister or my mom or something. I don't mind helping, but yeah, for me, I just like people just to get to the point because we're dragging it out and you're going to ask the question anyway. So let's get to it.
If I could just wear a t-shirt that had one slogan, it would be the get to the point. Or tell me what you really want to say. Oh, I hate when people just like passive aggressive. They don't tell you what they want to say. Ooh, that's more breaks. I'm just breaking all over the place.
Meanwhile, I'm like the queen of passive aggressive, but it's okay. We're gonna deal with that. So I am going to boost because I'm super excited. In the mail today, I received a paper. It said Dreamcatcher trademarked. I know I'm late. Meanwhile,
wait, what?
I had not trademarked. I know. I can finally speak on it now because I was so scared that someone was going to trademark it.
How many years has it been, my friend?
Honestly, it's been like at least 6 or 7, I think.
I'm surprised it wasn't already trademarked by somebody. Wow.
Yeah, well, Dreamcatcher, as the way I'm using it. So Dreamcatcher, okay. It's like, I think it said something like, what does it say? To be used as like a a social club to support women in their financial goals or something like that. So, I mean, obviously I don't like, you can use Dreamcatcher 10,000 ways, just not in this way, like the way I'm using it. So like another financial person couldn't say my group is called Dreamcatchers, you know? So, cause when you trademark, like, for example, I saw a Four Seasons, like we know Four Seasons is like the fancy hotel, but I saw a Four Seasons garden shop. So clearly like the Four Seasons hotel does not own the Four Seasons for the garden shop. So, so yeah, but I'm just excited. Cause I was just like, yeah, I was sleeping on it, and it takes about a year. But by the time you like apply, but by the time they, you know, they go through all of the rigmarole. So I just want to shout out, Toni Moore of Legally Chic. She's so awesome. Honestly, like I said, I mean, I have two lawyers, but Toni does like my day-to-day stuff. So she's the one who kind of like, not kind of, but she does all my trademarks and stuff now. She's really great. She's fast. She's swift. She's sharp as hell. And, yeah, so we've got a couple other trademarks coming down the pipeline. Like she was the one, like what I love about Toni too, is that she'll like check up and be like, I remember when my trademark for the Budgetista expired. Can you imagine?
Oh God.
I know. I mean, luckily I have it, obviously. But
does our Brand Ambition trademark expire? When does that happen?
So I think the way it's, I think it's like the first, because trademark's supposed to last for 10 years, but I think it's like, it's 5 years, then like 7 and 10. I don't know. Like they'll send an email though. But
Toni's our lawyer. Tell her to check.
Oh, you know I should. You're right. I forgot that she did our like our stuff too. But yeah, Toni's awesome. But yeah, I was like, so she just sent me the thing in the mail. I was like, woo woo, yay! Yeah, I definitely was on pins and needles for that one. I was like, yikes.
Well, congrats. It's official. Put it on t-shirts now.
I know, exactly. So that's another trademark. Isn't that crazy? In order to put that on t-shirts, I think that's another trademark.
Yeah, it's true. It is. It's very annoying. Just give the government more monies.
Oh, more money. It is. But I'm like, whatever. But as long as like I own that as it relates to like financial like groups, I'm good to go.
I love having that little letter with the little gold seal on it.
Yeah.
It's so special.
I got like, you know, it was like some one of those big envelopes in the mail, and I'm like opening it like, what is this? And I was like, So I was excited. I was like, I have to share with the Dreamcatchers. I'm like, should I share? I think I'd be like, girl, we haven't been official. I'm like, whatever, we're official now.
What you don't know can't hurt you.
Exactly.
Aw, congrats. Well, that's exciting. Book deals popping, trademarks popping.
Yeah,
your book should be called Tiffany Inc.
What about how to start a? No, I feel like I want to wait until I wouldn't write a business book. Not that you can't, but I want to wait until I have a 8-figure-a-year business. Then I feel like, okay, I've got, not that like, you know, like you can't have a 5-figure-a-year business and write a business book, but I feel like then, because I really want to write a business book called Do Good, like, you know, help good people, do good work, make good money. Like, how do you do that? That's like, honestly, that's like a book that I have in me that I'm not writing anytime soon.
That's the book. Do that.
You're like, that's
why do you need 8 figures? Why these arbitrary numbers?
I don't know. You know how you have like a thing.
Tiffany,
I feel
10
like,
years ago, can you imagine 8 figures? She's probably like, can I get 4 figures?
What? Exactly. Because I legitimately, I think my first year in business made like $2,000. I was like, oh, clearly I was living off unemployment. But yeah, no. But I do want to write like a business book about that. Like, how do you do that? How do you run a business without, you know, being like some terrible person and like, you know, and helping good people and giving a lot away for free. Like, what does that look like to run a profitable business that kind of feels like a nonprofit, but is profitable, you know? So yeah, I mean, I'm still, you know, I'm still learning. That's why I kind of feel like maybe that's why I said 8 figures, because I feel like then I'd be like, not that I wouldn't be learning anymore, but then I would feel like, okay, because we're multi 7 figures now, and I really think we'll hit 8 figures by next year. That's what our trajectory is looking like. But I feel like that's like a figure that people really take seriously. Like, you know, my business makes $10 to $20 million a year, because, you know, like everybody, you know, when I tell them about doing good work, it sounds so kumbaya. But then you're like, oh well, my business makes I don't make $20 million a year now. But to say like, yeah, it's not just kumbaya, it works. You can, you know, you can help people. You can give a lot away for free. You can not overcharge. You can do those things and have an 8-figure-a-year business. Like, that's for some reason, I just feel like that's like a serious business number that folks who might otherwise poo-poo at like, you know, helping people and being good to people would be like, well, you know, I mean, she's got a viable business. It's not a small, you know, like what does small business equal? Like when your annual income, I wonder what like the threshold is for a small business.
Might have more to do with the number of employees. I don't really know.
Oh, that's true. I think you're right.
I don't know though, Tiff. I feel like you start writing it now. By the time you get this tent, the eight figures, you'll be ready to publish. Perfect timing.
You never know. You're right.
Yeah, that's the book I feel like we need.
Okay.
General personal finance advice. There's plenty of those. You know, what can you bring that no one else can bring? And you know better than anyone how to start that business that does good and makes good money.
Yeah.
That's the Tiffany. That's the Tiffany magic.
That's Tiffany Inc.
Yep.
Okay, well, now it's time to say goodbye to Brian and Fish.
Felt the Mickey Mouse Club theme coming.
Yeah, you felt it?
Felt you searching for it.
Ambition. Yeah. Oh, yo, that's hilarious. You know me so well. Like, I'm like, what is the song we're going to end with?
When we're doing this podcast in our 80s, I'll be like, here she goes.
First of all, I'm going to be like, now it's, wait, who are you? Wanda.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.